My mantra has always been, and I said it a minute before, is make today better than yesterday. Make this week better than last week. This month better than last month. And it's small incremental changes. If you try to go from a 50% OEE to a 70% OEE in 1 week, it's not sustainable. All it means is if you just ran the equipment too hard, you beat up the employees, and it never works.
Welcome to Get Unstuck and On Target, the weekly podcast that offers senior leaders insights and strategies to not only lead with competence and vision, but also to achieve groundbreaking results. I'm your host, Mike O'Neill. I coach top-level executives on the power of ethical leadership to forge teams to be as united as they are effective. In each episode, join me for insightful conversations with leaders just like you, providing practical advice to help you get unstuck and propel you and your company forward. Let's get started. Joining me is Jay David. Jay is a fractional manufacturing COO and founder of Do Business Better. I love that title. Prior, he was the chief operating officer for Mount Franklin Foods, and that's a large general line candy company, had six factories in the U.S. and Mexico with more than 3,500 team members. Jay has led a number of turnarounds over the years by restoring profitability to these struggling organizations. I just think he's going to be a natural guest, and I look forward to speaking to you about turnarounds and want to welcome you to this podcast. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You know, Jay, we've had an opportunity to get to know each other prior to us scheduling this, but what I found a little bit unusual for you is that you kind of have come about getting to where you are now in a little less conventional way, meaning you didn't necessarily start college right out of high school, did you?
No, I did not. Took the path less traveled, for sure.
So tell me more. You started, if memory serves me, you were in restaurant management for a good while.
Yeah, I started as a restaurant cook in high school, and they loved the work that I did and the work ethic that I displayed, and they wanted me to go into restaurant management. I told them, no way, I'm going to go to college and get a degree. Went to college for 1 year, primarily to play baseball. Rarely went to class, didn't take it seriously at all. Loved the baseball side, but I quit. And I didn't go back to college until many, many years later. In the interim, I spent about 8 years in restaurant management. I did go back to them, and they welcomed me with open arms and trained me how to be a restaurant manager. So I did that for 8 years, met my wife, had a kid along the way, and realized that that wasn't the lifestyle that I wanted. Weekends, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week business, and just had a bad day one day and drove to the local community college, signed up for one class, and began my journey to my college degree.
You know, food service, restaurants, gosh, that's a hard, hard life. And you're right, it is 24/7. But to some extent, where you end up going kind of fits that same definition. I introduce you as being a former COO and out of a manufacturing organization. It is 24/7. Mm-hmm. But what you mentioned is you started, and I think if I remember correctly, you ended up getting an accounting degree. Is that right?
Yeah. I have always been good with numbers, and I actually, in my restaurant management time, I innovated a little bit there with Lotus 1-2-3 in the old days and helped automate inventory processes. So when I sought a degree, I thought accounting was the right thing for me with my love of numbers, but also knew that it would lead to a job. So it was the right thing at the right time, for sure.
Now, I don't mean this as a generalization, but oftentimes people who have accounting degrees stay in some type of accounting role, but you found yourself in operations. Walk us through, how did you find yourself in an operational role?
I think it gets back to my primary choice. I chose accounting because it would get me a job for sure, and because I had a love of numbers. But what I loved about the restaurant business was managing people, managing the finance side of it, the performance, and the turnaround piece, and fixing processes along the way. So I found that when I got into accounting, you have the month-end routines where you're closing the books and doing that things. Everything is repetitive. So my first job was actually as a cost accountant with Farley Foods in Chicago, which was a multi-plant candy business, primarily doing fruit snacks. And we were required to wear suits and ties in the office every day. Mm. But I always wanted to go to the plant floor. So I put my smock on, my hairnet, spent most of my time on the plant floor working with the plant manager on productivity. Did my month-end responsibilities, but I was always attracted to the plant floor and partnered very closely with those plant managers to help them fix things. I could add the financial perspective, and I actually did a little modeling for them in Microsoft Excel to give them some models to play with to help them understand the impact of some of their decisions. So that led me toward raising my hand and saying I wanted to make a move into operations.
As you know, I came out of a manufacturing background. There's something about, you know, walking out and seeing something made that's just very, very gratifying. Mm-hmm. Manufacturing is a capital intensive industry. But gosh, it seems as if the main challenges of manufacturing isn't the machinery. It's the people who you expect to operate that machinery. At least that's my observations. What did you find?
Exactly the same thing, Mike. And that's why I think my restaurant background and managing people and getting the most out of them made me successful there. A lot of companies require their plant managers to be engineers. And that from a technical standpoint makes all the sense in the world. But as you said, it's more about managing people. At Mount Franklin, I had 3,500 employees, supervisors, maintenance, warehouse folks, all in there. If you can't manage them successfully, it doesn't really matter what the equipment does. So it is about the people, how to recruit, how to train, how to retain, and just to get the most out of them. How do you get them on your side to say, I want to work here because I want the company to succeed, not just every week when I get my paycheck? So that is the biggest challenge. And that's why some great plant managers out there are kind of unicorns. I've recruited plant managers in my day that don't have the engineering background or the accounting background. I recruit and hire them just because they're great people, persons, and I can fill in the gaps on their technical knowledge.
I can't count how many times I have found myself saying this, and that is there's a tendency for organizations to promote people because of their technical skills. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing about that prepares them to manage others.
Right.
And so a lot of the training work that we do for clients focuses on those people skills. Why? Because it comes up time and time again as a challenge, but it's a challenge that can be overcome, but you got to kind of give them the tools to be successful. You know, Jay, I introduce you as having expertise in running businesses, but you also have found yourself in situations where a turnaround might very well be warranted. Just to set the stage, how do you define the term turnaround?
It can be something very small as an individual process within a factory or business is broken. Maybe it's just quality. Financially, the company's great, everything's looking good, but it may just be continued quality problems where they've had a couple of recalls in the marketplace, or they generate way too much scrap, their yield is off. So it can be some small turnarounds such as that, but it can also be full company turnarounds that are, you're digging into the finances, you're digging into HR issues, you're digging into how can we deliver our product better. It can be any number of things. So in my past, I've I've been involved in turnarounds on a process level, a factory level, but also a full company level where we've restored either profitability or whatever the problem was. We've restored customer satisfaction by getting our deliveries on time and so on.
Why don't we kind of go through each of those? I think you mentioned if we were to say three different tiers, it could be a need to improve a process, maybe significantly improve that process. Improving a process in the context of a turnaround, what do you find? You've been doing this for a long time. When you go into an organization, how do you assess where the biggest challenges are?
A lot of it definitely comes from, if I'm doing it from a consulting side, it would be beginning to talk with the owner or the CEO of the company. They're going to tell me their perspective of what they think is wrong. But what they may be telling me is we're not making money anymore. And I think it's because of these five things. But then I'll typically go out and talk to their direct reports, get their perspectives. Talk to the sales team. What products are you, or problems are you having in the marketplace? Is it delivery issues? Is it quality? Is it lack of innovation? What are the customers feeling? And then talk to some hourly employees and hear what their issues are. A lot of times the middle management leadership will mask some of the issues and you really get an honest perspective from the employees. If it's me going in, like I did at Mount Franklin Foods, at the time we were in cash flow difficulty. We had severe quality issues. We weren't delivering to our customers. And really all of that was kind of dropped on me, when I started my job there as the chief operating officer. And I just, the old analogy of how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So you have to start going in there and just, making day to day, week to week, month to month, incremental improvement in each of those areas. If you look at it like a huge elephant, it's overwhelming and you're never going to make progress. But what I would always tell the employees at that time is in 6 months, we're going to look back and we're going to say, wow, do you remember when this used to happen? Do you remember when we didn't have materials to produce? Do you remember when we didn't have enough employees to get this job done? Think of where we're at now. And a lot of times the feedback was, Jade, we're still not very good. Okay. In another 6 months, we're going to look back and we're going to be amazed at the progress we made.
You know, Jay, when you mentioned it takes time, you know, when I look at the word turnaround, when I hear the term turnaround, it for me, sometimes it feels as if it's got to be an immediate 180. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing you say is that more often than not is it may require significant change, but you have found that it's always best to be looking at what's the most important thing we can be working on. And what I heard you describe is what incremental improvements can we make right now?
Right.
And keep making those changes.
Yeah. Sometimes the quick fix becomes the quick fail also. When you come in and you try to make too much change too quickly or attack 50 problems rather than three problems, the organization gets confused, everybody's in a panic, and you don't get enough traction on really the things that you want to tackle. So, you know, usually what I'll try to do is to say in my questioning period, you know, is there an existential threat right now? Are we at the threat of closing our doors? Are we at the threat of losing a major customer? Do we have any life-saving safety issues in the building? That's what I'll jump to address first. If that's not the case, once you get beyond that, that says, no, okay, we just need to turn the vehicle, you know, 45 degrees and head in a better direction, then it's typically you go in and you start to try to make some, you know, some quick victories. And usually those are employee related. It might be some safety issues on the floor. It might be we're working a ton of overtime and we're tired. It can be just listening to the employees. And and then coaching the plant management team. Hey, here's four things we need to do today. Let's make the employees' lives a little bit better. And then all of a sudden you get attention and everybody is on the same page. Then they're accepting for more change to come. You know, after that, it's about finding what the big issues are. So if it's profitability, okay, well, what is the issue on profitability? Are you paying too much for your materials? Do you have inefficient processes where you're wasting labor out on the floor? Then you get in and root cause those and figure out really what is the quickest and biggest way we can make an impact on that. But my mantra has always been, and I said it a minute before, is make today better than yesterday, make this week better than last week, this month better than last month. And it's small incremental changes. If you try to go from a 50% OEE to a 70% OEE in 1 week, it's not sustainable. All it means is if you just ran the equipment too hard, you beat up the employees, and it never works.
Jay, as you were describing this, I'm kind of a visual person, and that is you kind of advise us, don't take on too much. At the same time, you really want them to be able to see that progress. When I mentioned I'm a visual person, have you found that given visibility to what it is that you're trying to address, what comes immediately to mind would be scorecards or something like that, do you find that people need to be able to see where things are going to truly buy in and feel that there is, in fact, some progress going in the right direction?
For sure. And that, again, it gets into the reason why you focus on one or two in an area. If you try to attack 20 problems, it's overwhelming to the organization. The employees can't get it. So if it's about scrap, then you visually track your scrap every day and you put a big number up on the wall and you have a quick stand-up meeting every morning and say, okay, yesterday we generated 150 pounds of scrap. Let's talk about the three biggest contributors to that scrap yesterday and go from there. And, you know, there's a point in time where that changes. Maybe you've tackled scrap, then you take it from a daily discussion, you put it to a weekly or monthly discussion. Then you bring another one forward, and maybe that's machine downtime. Whatever you want to look at, but for sure, you definitely want some visual reminders out there that everybody can focus on.
You have served as a chief operating officer for a manufacturing company. Your company, which I love the name, Do Business Better, is you offer fractional manufacturing COO services. This might be a concept that's new to the folks watching or listening. Can you explain what does that look like to, if a business owner is listening right now, how would a fractional manufacturing COO work?
Well, there's a difference between a plant manager and what his day-to-day role is versus a vice president of operations or a chief operating officer. My role typically was strategic. So if you ask me what was running on any given piece of equipment today, I don't know. That's my plant manager's job, production manager. My role was really focused 6 months to 2 to 3 years out, interfacing a lot with sales, understanding the market that's going forward and building the plant for the future. So what type of capacity needs are we going to have? What type of training programs should we adopt to help bring our people forward? And really, from an executive standpoint, you know, helping really globally run the company. So there's a lot of smaller organizations, small manufacturers that are, the founder is still around. They might be in the $50 to $100 million range. They can't afford that type of org chart in the operations area. So typically the plant manager will report up to the owner at that point. And the owner's wearing all of the hats that they typically do. But what they need is somebody in there that can think more strategically just from the factory or distribution, you know, side of the business. And while the day-to-day is still going on. So a fractional COO can go in and take that role fractionally. So at 1/4 what you would normally pay a COO, if that's the level of commitment of a certain period of time on site, and then day-to-day attendance of meetings, remote and project related also. So that helps them step into that type of strategic role without doing the full financial commitment. It also means that I can help some organizations raise the skill level of that plant manager and getting them to think strategically. And, your company is bench builders, and you talk a lot about bench strength. I always tell a plant manager, if you want my job someday, you need to have a replacement right behind you so you're ready so I can promote you. And I used to spend time with all of my guys and help them understand what I was doing from a strategic perspective. So bringing them forward. And what's funny is I learned that back in my restaurant days as a general manager. We had 28 restaurants in the Chicago area. I always had 3 or 4 assistant managers trained and ready to go. It might be one of my best cooks, a head waitress, somebody else. I always had them ready in the event that I lost one. And it ended up that I used to feed assistant managers to other locations in the city. So, I think that's very important. A lot of founders, owners are not able to develop those guys because they only know what they know. So mentoring and counseling from that perspective as well is what we do.
You work a lot with owners who know what they're doing very, very well, but they're putting out fires constantly. Mm-hmm. If they're bringing you in, they're bringing expertise. What I'm hearing you describe, part of that expertise is to be able to have a little bit of a more strategic mindset. And that is not so much the day-to-day, that's what the plant manager is for, but begin putting in place things that would enable the company to sustain success. Let's go back to the owners a bit. For an owner to say yes, to bring in Jay David, it means they're going to be turning over things. Is that something that owners sometimes struggle to do?
Absolutely. And, as I've spoken to several guys in the past, it's been about, for a period of time, you're going to have to let me lead them. They can't. If you and I will interface regularly about what your expectations are, but they have to know who they're working for during this time frame and be able to go around to the owner and like a Jerry Jones situation with the Cowboys, and override. So that is difficult. But as long as I set the tone right with the owner or founder up front and build that trust, and I am open and honest with them on weekly updates or whatever as to where we're heading, it hasn't been a problem. So we get along well that way. And really, it's in their best interest, because what I'm doing also is bringing objectivity to their factory. A lot of times, owners and founders, it may be wrong as I say it, but they love their product so much, they can't take an objective view at it. At the end of the day, they're making a widget, and that's what the consumer looks at it as, a widget. And I can put some objectivity to it that says, we're spending too much effort on this. We need to back off on this. We can save some things here while we invest over here to correct some of these problems. And it's sometimes things that they've been reluctant to do in the past, for sure.
Yeah. As I've gotten to know folks in fractional roles, CFOs, heads of sales, HR, et cetera, there is maybe a variety of ways in which an organization would use these fractional folks. Sometimes they're brought in to fix a major issue, so it's more project minded. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's acknowledgement that we just need an extra set of well-trained eyes to look, point out, and help us address that. What I really like what you're describing is an organization could choose to use you in a fractional capacity. And it's not necessarily a 3-month, 6-month assignment. It could run much longer than that if you're providing what I suspect is the real return on that investment that's impacting the bottom line. What are you finding in your work and with others who do this type of work? Is it project or does it oftentimes become more long-term?
Well, that's where the difference in operations comes in versus sales or fractional CFO. A lot of that can be done remote because it's computer-based, it's spreadsheet-based. Operations typically is more of an on-site role. So for sure, for instance, an owner that is looking at a small acquisition that might be adding another factory. So now all of a sudden he's run one location forever and now he's going into a second. He might need somebody in my role for a year to help build that multi-site overwatch and help build the organization to manage, to help bring together the systems and consolidate maintenance programs and training programs and so on. So that might be a year assignment. But what I've also told folks is, you know, from just a project basis, we're wanting to take this production line. We're trying to automate. So we're going to add robotics. We're going to add auto case packers, palletizers, and things like that. And we just need an extra body, really, because we're going to be running the day-to-day to oversee that entire project and to act in a project manager / almost contractor role to make sure, get the people hired, get the people trained, and everything like that. So, you know, there's a wide array of skill sets that we can bring.
I know that you pride yourself in able to help organizations fix problems that have eluded them. Can you reflect on a time where perhaps the organization you're working with or a client got stuck? And what did that happen? What did it take to get unstuck?
One of the things that I did right after Mount Franklin is helped a local company, a beverage company, that they were in the middle of COVID. They were short people. They were running mandatory overtime. They were just in absolute survival mode. And they were kind of blinded to the fact, you know, when I walked in as the outsider, mandatory overtime, down 20% on headcount because of COVID, no plant manager, no maintenance manager, struggling all around. And in some aspect, they were kind of oblivious that, okay, well, this is kind of how we're surviving right now. Mm-hmm. And I walked in immediately and gave them a proposal, and we made an agreement right away. And the first thing I did is, we're done with overtime. These people are exhausted, and we're not in dire straits from an inventory perspective or shipping to our customers, but because they were so close to it, they didn't see that these folks had worked 13 Saturdays in a row.
Goodness.
And, you know, so that was the first thing we did, is to say, we have to just stop, think about what we're doing, and hit the reset button. And that immediately gave a morale boost. It showed the employees that there was somebody on their side. It took a lot of negotiation on the executive side to absorb that. But the promise was, we're going to see it in productivity during the week. And guess what? On those Saturdays, we can also maintain our equipment. We can do our preventive maintenance with the maintenance guys and really help along the way. So a short 6-week, 8-week delay of going back into any type of overtime made all the great things come out during that process and really helped set up future success after that.
You have shared with us in this conversation a little bit of an unconventional route. That is, you know, right out of high school, or actually in high school, you began working in restaurants and you took on managerial responsibility and you learned how critical it was to effectively manage others at a point where others may have already completed their degree. Well beyond that point, you'd entered back and started working an audit degree, an accounting degree that you chose in large part because of its marketability. But then you found a way to apply what you learned in accounting, particularly cost accounting and the like, and make it relatable to those folks on the manufacturing floor. And I love the way that you found that that kind of drew you into operations and more responsibility, where you became a COO, and now you're working from that in a fractional capacity, helping cover the things we've talked about and much, much more. Jay, as you kind of reflect on this conversation, what do you want to be the takeaways?
I think the biggest takeaway is there's always a fresh set of eyes to come in and give you another perspective. And it doesn't have to be a situation where somebody comes in and it's a large engagement where they bring in a group of six or eight people, but a fresh set of eyes just walking through and saying, here's what I see. And that's essentially what the previous company I referred to. I came out for a week, spent the week with them, toured the plant, and spent a lot of time on the floor talking with people. And then the proposal was easy. Here's everything that you need, I think, to get things set in a better way. I can come and help you do it, or I can come and do it for you on a more permanent basis. And we can talk years instead of months. And I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of the things that I presented would have been evident to many people, but because they were in their own paradigm, and really a bunch of long-term leaders who hadn't been outside their industry, they were blind to a lot of it. So open up and ask for outside opinion. And again, not with the idea that it's going to cost you a ton of money or lose a little bit of control of your company, but that's the biggest thing, I think. And really what I've learned over the years, and people have said, is it just manufacturing, Jay? I said, the reason I call it Do Business Better is this applies everywhere. My wife and my son are in healthcare. I get to hear their complaints every day about how their offices have dysfunctions within them. And it gets into processes and discussing with them. A hospital is like a factory. You have inbound, you have conversion going on, and you have outbound. So really, as long as you understand those processes, and what I bring to it too is the financial background. So I understand how actions cause costs. And outside of the normal financial accounting perspective, I understand true cost drivers in all of that. So that's where I kind of have a little bit different perspective. I'm not just focused on OEE, but I can also counsel on cost accounting, cost management, and other topics that are non-traditional to an operations guy.
As expected, Jay, the perspective you bring is fresh. I appreciate your candor, things that you've learned along the way. I can see how you could be very valuable to your clients because you bring that to the role. Thank you for sharing that expertise with us today.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
I've got a question for our listeners. Are people following you because they have to or because they want to? Now, as a leadership coach, I work with executives who have a track record of success behind them, but they're now feeling stuck. They're frustrated because they're finding that with each level of success that follows, the bar is set even higher. They get discouraged because what worked in the past is no longer working. My clients, despite all their successes in the past, are lacking the clarity and the confidence to make the decisions to get to that next level. So if you're feeling stuck and that describes you or someone you know, let's talk. Go to bench-builders.com to schedule a call. So I want to thank you again for joining us. And I hope you have picked up on some quick wins from Jay that will help you get unstuck and on target. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Get Unstuck and On Target. I hope you've gained insights to help you lead with confidence and drive your organization forward. Remember, at Bench Builders, we're committed to your success, your leadership excellence, and your strategic growth. If you've enjoyed our conversation today, please leave a review, rate, and subscribe to keep up with our latest episodes. This show really grows when listeners like you share it with others. Who do you know who needs to hear what we talked about today? Until next time, I encourage you to stay focused on the target and continue to break new ground on your leadership path.